I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs to order. Welcome, everybody. There are so many bills that aren't ready that I'm not sure we're going to be here very long today. But we'll start at the top. We are pulling 848, and from what I hear, this bill will not come back. So that is Senate Bill 848. I'll wait on the next one. Senate Bill 508 and 507, they're not ready, but Courtney, would you let the committee know where you are? And Mr. Shook, would you let us know about 508 and 507?
Madam Chair, 507 requires certain health insurers to approve or reject participating provider applications within 30 days of receipt. And Senate Bill 508 requires health insurers to request refunds from providers within 12 months of date and payment and allow 6 months of payment a refund.
So I'll open a public hearing on both 508 and 507.
Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association. Thank you, Chairman Sanderson. I'd like to thank Senator Cruz and Senator Bates for sitting in on a work group with us last Friday with the stakeholders on these bills, and we came up with a few more changes and a few more places where we could try to come up with consensus as much as we can between the different insurance groups and the OMA, and we're fairly close. On 508, there is a very similar bill in Washington State, so we're just basically putting the Washington State law into Oregon, so that's just taking a little time to get the LC on that. 507, we just had a few minor changes from suggested by Regents, so we're doing those. So we should be hopefully, our legal folks should be done with all these by the end of the day. We'll get them all to Bob and get them to LC. So I'm hoping we'll be done as soon as LC can draft them.
Okay. John, do you want to say anything on those bills, 507 and 508? Get the
Madam Chair,
broad perspective on these bills.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Powell for Regents, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I think Courtney summarized it well. We're collaborating on it, and we appreciate the collaboration that's taking place on these two bills, and hopefully have language soon.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. So with amendments, Mr. Shook, can we maybe schedule those for next Tuesday? What does our schedule look for next
Tuesday? Tuesday would be fine. I would just caution you about the deadline. If there are any amendments after Tuesday, I think you've messed with the deadline.
So we could carry it over to Thursday and see if they would be, because we do have...
We have an evening meeting on Thursday.
Let's carry it over to Thursday and just see what's ready.
Okay.
Right. So we'll carry those two over. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 913.
Hearings on that,
okay.
On those two.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 913 appropriates money from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for distribution to the Oregon Center for Nursing for biannual expenses.
So let's call up Thomas Ashenbrenner, Chris Campbell, and Jack Dempsey.
Senator Mona Sanderson, I'm Thomas Ashenbrenner. I'm president of the Northwest Health Foundation, and I'm pleased to be here before your committee today and to talk with the members about the Oregon Center for Nursing and support for the Center for Nursing in an ongoing fashion by this legislature. We in Oregon have been very well served by the Center for Nursing in its very short time of operation here. They have done a great deal of work on workforce development that has led to a number of collaborative efforts among the educational groups as well as the practice groups, and we have been extremely pleased with the work that they've done. We got involved with the Center for Nursing after we commissioned the report on the nursing shortage in 2000 with Dr. Tanner. Many of you may know of the Tanner report. That was a project totally funded by our foundation. But the most important part came out after that report was finished, and that is that the We asked the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, made up of the directors from all of the education programs, both baccalaureate and associate degree, the nurse leadership in other forms, to come together and say, now what should we do with this nursing report? And what should we as a foundation do? And they came up with a number of recommendations which we then followed. I do want to say parenthetically that the nursing leadership group who met on this did an extraordinary job dealing with those issues. And to this day, members of my profession, my colleagues around the country said, how did you get the nurses to come together and work so well together? And we said, we simply trusted and believed in them that they would do that here. One of those recommendations was for a center for nursing. We funded that in its entirety for the first 4 years, and then we have helped build collaborative funding for that work until the legislature funded it in the last biennium, and we continue to be with them in a number of their projects today. So we have been extremely close with the center and are pleased that they're moving forward in areas that are most in need in this state to the citizens. As we're changing the demographics, they are providing leadership in revising the LPN training. They have provided leadership in looking at education programs, and Oregon, as you may know, is now considered a leader in the country in nurse education with what has become known as the Oregon model. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and AARP in their National Nurse Funders Group are actually coming here to have a conference on the Oregon model because of the work that has been done by the nursing leadership here, supported by OCN. So we should be very proud. I think that we in Oregon are safer, that we are in better hands as we are aging because of the work of the Oregon Center for Nursing. And I simply want to say that we at Northwest Health Foundation continue to support the work that they're doing, and we continue to encourage our other colleagues to support it. But because the work of the Center for Nursing is a state resource, I mean, they are one of the few funded entities, well, maybe that's too strong. They are one of the funded entities that this legislature has funded that is actually addressing the needs of the people of Oregon. And I'm very, very proud of the work that they have done. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all the good work that you've done with the Northwest Foundation.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Good morning, Senator Mata Sanderson and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to be here again before you and for all the work that you have done around the nursing shortage and in support of the center. We're very grateful for all of that. As you heard and you know, the Oregon Center for Nursing was created in 2002 by the nursing leaders in the state. We're a nonprofit organization. And Mr. Ashenbrenner has told you of many of the accomplishments, and you've heard those before. I would like to say that we build capacity in this state, and we are the glue that holds the nursing organizations together, provide the leadership and the structure for all of the many partners to do the great work that has been done in this nursing community. We do workforce data, a lot of work around retention of nurses, work around the faculty shortages you have heard before. Our nursing workforce initiative is also pretty groundbreaking work, and we serve as advisory to lots of other people working on nursing workforce and healthcare workforce issues. Our student max is being looked at by the community colleges and workforce development for placement of all allied health students, so we've begun that discussion. So we're very grateful for the support and the funding from the legislature this last session, and which was $800,000. We took our $50,000 reduction and in the rebalancing, so that's our share of that. It's allowed us to leverage all of the investment in private foundation fundraising work that we have done to continue the programs that we've initiated to continue to work on the nursing shortage. We realize that all of the programs in the state are facing substantial cuts, and we understand we will have a piece of that. But no one else does what we do around the nursing workforce in the state. It's the number one job from the Oregon Employment Department, the biggest shortage in the whole state, not just for healthcare, but for all of workforce. So we would like the opportunity to continue to work on these issues and hope that this bill will move to Ways and Means so we can continue the discussion there. So thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you.
Chris, have you ever looked at working with the Board of Nursing to see if this could be fee-driven through licenses with nurses?
Two sessions ago, we had Senate Bill 1016, which was exactly that. It was a license surcharge to the registered nurse licenses and LPN licenses at that time to help fund the center, but that didn't make it anywhere.
Okay.
So we did try that once before.
I don't really compare it to, but I think about what we've done with the Oregon Safety Commission, and that was the same issue, and we stood pretty fast on not having general fund pay for it, and so I just forgot about 1016. I'm not quite sure why that didn't happen. Okay, other comments here?
Madam Chair, I would certainly support sending this to Ways and Means. I do want you to know that we've got new figures out for unemployment. Our revenue sources are going to be lower than we expected, I believe. We're looking at 30% cuts if we don't raise new revenue. Mm-hmm. Every program in front of us is important. I've not had a program yet. I thought this program should go away. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to maintain programs and to look as much as we can for ways of backfilling revenue. Mm-hmm. We are becoming a more and more fee-driven state. We're looking at higher education tuition or other areas, and natural resources, and I could go right down the line. And I think what the chair has spoken to here might be one way of partially backfilling. We've looked at fees for physicians, nurse practitioners, other prescribers for another bill that actually is not a huge fee, and it actually produces the funds necessary to maintain a prescription database for narcotics and other drugs. I use that as an example. And I want you to understand that we may be asking some questions, Ways and Means. We want to keep this program going. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be lost. And I'd be very supportive of coming down. I would ask you, if possible, to have a discussion with the nursing board about this. See if there's any sense there that a small fee would be successful and have back
the pushback.
I will certainly do that, Senator.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Yes, Senator Cruz.
I like Senator Moss Anderson, I vaguely remember the fee discussion. What was the pushback last session? Why did not we do that? Do you remember anecdotally, obviously, but
my recollection from that was it was sort of no new fees at that time. So I mean that's kind of what I remember about it. It also took longer to get through the process. We weren't as organized then.
Yes, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're all confronted with a dilemma here. I was prepared to vote no today, not from the standpoint of the merits, but from the standpoint of the fiscal challenges that we have. In deference to my good senator to my left.
I might always do his left. Clear.
I will vote to continue the discussion in Ways and Means, but a yes vote today is not a vote of endorsement, and I'd like to make that clear. It not because of the merits, but because of the fiscal challenges that we have.
We don't have a fiscal, so we can't move it today. So
office.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes it easy.
That was easy, didn't it?
Okay.
Just one more comment to piggyback on Senator Morris's. Historically, policy committees have sent things to Ways and Means because it's a good idea, and saying, we do the policy, we don't do the budget, but budget is policy. And we are going to see some policy driven from the Ways and Means committees this time. And so I kind of agree with Senator Morse. It's not a matter of merit. It's a matter of priorities to a degree. So budget is policy. So we need to, I would suggest potentially, Madam Chair, that when we do have the fiscal and we're ready to move it, that maybe we move it without recommendation, just simply because to allow the discussion to continue, but not putting an undue burden on our colleagues that sit down there, and we can be good guys by sending it down to them, then they're bad guys by saying we can't afford it. So there's a disconnect there.
Thank you, Senator Cruz.
there's but always, right. I mean, right. We also could amend it. With that, in it, right now. So let's talk with you and look at that option also, so that Ways and Means has a little more tools. Yeah.
Jack Dempsey with the Oregon Nurses Association. We obviously support funding the center also, and I think my plea would be to move this to the Ways and Means Committee to continue this. And looking at nursing as the top workforce need in the state in all professions, I think if you guys are going to do some targeted investments in workforce in any manner this session, I think this should be considered right at the top along with the other things you're looking at. So I think getting it to Ways and Means, so if those conversations happen about stimulus of one sort or another to target workforce, this will be available.
Let's get an amendment in there, but let's work with Chris on language and see what we can do with that, and then we'll have this. So we don't have the fiscal anyway, so we couldn't move it. We'll do that. Any other comments? All right. Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 913, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 556, but we don't have the fiscal, but we have the dash twos and fours. Mr. Shook, would you?
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 556 requires certain places of public assembly to have automated external defibrillators, and the owner of the place of the public assembly ensures that staff will be trained in the use of the defibrillator, that he is present when the place of public assembly is open to the public. We heard this bill about a month ago. There have been four amendments, I believe, that dash two and dash four that you have in your packet are the ones that are being asked to be reviewed this morning. And we do not have a fiscal as of this morning.
Well, it looks like the twos and the fours are exactly the same, except some wording. So is there someone here that can speak to the dash twos and the dash fours?
Madam Chair, the difference is in the dash four, it has the language to require at least 25 individuals congregate on a normal business day to deal with the warehouse issue that we brought up. So I don't think we need the twos. I think the fours are the relevant amendment.
Right.
And I want to thank Senator Haas for his willingness to accommodate us on that issue. So, Madam Chair, if you'd like to adopt the fours.
I wish that we hear from Senator Haas's office. Do you want to give him a call? And we will just close the work session on Senate Bill 556.
Well, Madam Chair, just for your knowledge, as one of the chief co-sponsors of the bill, I think this is okay.
Yeah, I think it is too, but just to be sure, we'll come back to that. With that, I'll open we're not ready for Senate Bill 796, so we will be carrying that one over to Thursday. Hopefully we'll see what we can do. Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 729.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 729 allows podiatrist, podiatric physician, and surgeon to assist physician in surgery on any part of the body. You heard this about 3 weeks ago. There were no amendments, and we do have the revenue and fiscal impacts in your packet.
And we are in work session.
Just a step behind you, Madam Chair. Okay. Madam Chair, let me see. I move Senate Bill 729 to the floor to do pass the recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 729 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. Senator Cruz, do you want to carry this bill?
I'm just wondering if Senator Monroe's
bill. Senator Monroe's bill. We'll have Senator Monroe carry this bill.
Right.
With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 729. And because we don't have a fiscal on Senate Bill 734, we'll open a work session on 734. And do we have any?
No, I don't have the fiscal on 734.
Okay, so we will close the work session on Senate Bill 734. Yes. Moving right along here. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 700.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 700 creates a task force on veterans reintegration. This was heard a couple of weeks ago, and we do have a fiscal and revenue in your packet.
Yay. Okay. We are in work session. Is there any discussion on Senate Bill 700? It will be going to Ways and Means, because we do have the fiscal.
Yes, we do. No amendments, right?
No amendments.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 700 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 700 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 700 and open a work session on Senate Bill 725.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 725 creates a task force on women's veterans health care. You heard this bill in public hearing a couple of weeks ago. There are no amendments, and you do have the fiscal and revenue in your packets.
Okay. We are in work session, and we don't need to talk about it anymore unless you want to.
But we do send it, right?
Yes. This is another Ways and Means bill.
And Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 725 to the floor to do pass a recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 725 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Just for my understanding, because I'll probably be having to vote on this, it looks like the impact, I'm reading these very quickly, I haven't had a chance to see until this morning, the financial impact of both these bills is exactly the same, very close. Are these task force going to be run together? I thought in the testimony they wanted them separated out. I'm a little...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm the Public Information Manager with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Madam Chair, Senator Bates. No, these would be separate task forces dealing with two separate issues. However, the players would be relatively the same. The military department's reintegration team, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, other players for reintegration one. Women's task force, however, there's a bill coming to you from the House that does not have a Ways and Means subsequent because we've done some work to make sure that the agencies are going to absorb that cost. And it'll be military department, Department of Veterans Affairs. We've amended that bill to include healthcare professionals, women veterans, and other folks. So,
Senator Cruz.
So, Tom, does the House bill do what this bill is purporting to do without a fiscal?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, yes, it does. The bill got dropped in both houses, one by Senator Johnson and the other by Representative Gelser. And so the one coming to you from the House, again, does not have a subsequent to Ways and Means because of some work we did, and it will be coming to you amended. It has a little bit more in the bill than this one does. So I'm assuming if this bill moves to Ways and Means, we'll probably talk to Ways and Means about the House bill.
Madam Chair, I tell you, we got a lot of work to do down there.
Yeah.
We got a bill coming to the side with, they're just going to go to the floors with no fiscal on it. I think we should support that bill and maybe let this bill die in this committee, but send the other bill on down.
I would, Madam Chair, under this new information, I would agree, and I will withdraw my motion.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll close the work session on 725, and we'll open a work session on 701.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 701 changes the nursing service program to nursing faculty loan repayment program.
And we are actually rescheduling this for Tuesday. There are amendments coming. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 701, and let's come back to Senate Bill 556. Have we heard from Senator Hass's?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I can't get anyone to answer the phone. Would you like me to leave a voicemail?
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I think we can do this.
All right.
Okay. I would, Madam Chair, I would endorse. I did have discussions with Senator Hass.
So did I.
And this was based on the discussion that we had, and he was very, very agreeable to the amendment.
Excellent. Well, I'll reopen the work session on 556, and we'll trust the judgment, since no one's talked to me about it, of Senator Morse and Senator Cruz, the two Republicans on the committee. Yeah, we're in work session.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 556.
All right. Senator Cruz moves the -4s to Senate Bill 556. Is there any discussion? Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I would just like to point out that in my district, and you may have read about it in the newspaper, that having access to an automated external defibrillator saved a man's life on RDC University campus. And it was the immediate response, immediate availability, classic example of why this bill is moving forward.
Wonderful. Yeah. Senator Bates.
Yeah, just to make a comment, I'm still very concerned about this not being available in the area which I think is most important, which is our junior high and high schools across the state. And we're looking very carefully at a probability of a capital improvement bill coming through Ways and Means, which we could take a de minimis amount of money from and fund this bill for those areas at that level. And I think it's best done in Ways and Means and not in this committee. I don't want to send a bill down with that kind of a fiscal on it to find out we've killed a good bill inadvertently. We will add it there if we have an opportunity to.
Wonderful, because we do read periodically about our athletes who collapse on the floor. So I think that's
probably
excellent for your follow-through in Ways and Means.
Yeah,
Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, and I understand Senator Bates' concern, but we are doing this in steps. I was the sponsor of the bill that got it in public buildings, and this is the next step, and we do this in steps. And this is very appropriate, what we're doing, and we put the appropriate safeguards in that we don't have negative impacts. So I like this bill a lot. So.
Excellent.
We will make sure it doesn't get hurt. Okay.
Well, it doesn't go to Ways and Means, does it?
I can place in the appropriations bill.
Right, right.
Got me?
Right.
So I had an amendment for this. I don't want to put in the bill now.
If it's near death, we can defibrillate it.
You defibrillate that.
So wise, Senator Morissette. We will. Okay, well, the fiscal basically it says no. I got to find the fiscal.
Oh, there isn't one.
There isn't one.
So we have to wait for it anyway. Okay.
Madam Chair,
we can pass out the -4s.
Right. And the fiscal department told me it should be ready late this morning. So if you wanted to carry this over.
Excellent.
Okay.
And they're doing their fiscal on the dash fours.
Okay.
Good.
But there is a motion for the dash fours.
There is a motion for the fours.
So is there any opposition? All right. So ordered. And then we will carry this bill over to Thursday. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 556. And have we covered everything?
679.
Oh, yes. I was waiting for Senator Bates on that one. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 679. And Mr. Shook.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 679 authorizes insurers to pay dividends in form of cash rewards to enrollees who participate in approved programs to promote healthy lifestyle.
And this is Senator Morse's and Bates's bill. And you know which people should come first?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morse.
Thank you. I will remain on the dais and have asked Ed Wright,
okay,
my staff, who has worked very diligently with Dr. Lees and others in the healthcare area.
Excellent. So Ed Wright and Dr. Lees and Denise Johnson.
And Nadine
Wood.
Chair Morris Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Edward Wright. I'm the policy advisor to Senator Frank Morris. This is a single concept bill. The bill is to allow insurers to offer a healthy benefit plan that it may pay a cash dividend to enrollees in the plan who comply with standards established by the plan for the health for healthy behavior. The creation of this plan is up to the insurer, and we hope it is developed in cooperation with local community groups. The intent of the bill is to help people connect their insurance premiums to their lifestyle choices, since that seems to be a big driver in health. If you ever started an exercise or diet program, you know how hard it is to continue without a support buddy. We hope that this bill will help individuals make the choice to live a healthier life and to put into place the community support needed for everyone to continue the new lifestyle. Dr. Lees will cover the conceptual base for this plan.
Okay, thank you for inviting us here. Do you have these blue packets? I'd like to just go over three pages there. The front page.
And introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Dr. John Lees. I'm an ophthalmologist in Albany, Oregon, and have been working on this bill for quite a while now.
Great.
Right. But on the front page, we describe the purpose, and that's to offer the cash dividend to clients of health insurance companies. Our goals are to encourage tobacco cessation, encourage weight loss, encourage fitness, and encourage nutrition. We feel that a large portion of the health care costs up to age 65 are related to lifestyle choices. If you go to page 5 on here, you'll see the goals we're after and the estimates of the current status. For example, smoking 17%, and non-smoking 83%. We'd like to move that down to 89% smoking. And then we go down obesity, processed foods, fitness, moving a lot of the expense that we pay for heart centers, diabetic centers, tertiary care centers, dialysis centers over into the realm of preventive care by working on healthy lifestyles. On page 3, we give an example of how it could be implemented. It's it would be given to people who do not smoke and whose weight are within normal accepted norms, or
are participating in programs that move them in that direction. This makes it totally inclusive. Everybody would have an opportunity to get their health dividend. It also, by creating the health dividend, we're forcing society to bring partnerships together between the health insurance company, the employers, and the employees to sit down and establish goals in their community that are achievable and clear and simple.
Chair Senator Anderson and Senators, I'm Nadine Wood and I'm from Albany, and I'm grateful to be able to talk to you today in support of Senate Bill 679. Just a couple weeks ago, on March 31st, the Task Force for a Comprehensive Obesity Prevention Initiative reported that obesity in Oregon is increasing at alarming rates, and concluded that obesity in Oregon is a public health crisis. 1 in 5 children and 6 in 10 adult Oregonians are overweight or obese. Obesity leads to an increased risk of disease at an estimated cost to Oregonians of $781 million annually. That's all from that report. Policy recommendations from the Task Force for a Comprehensive Obesity Prevention Initiative call for obesity prevention that is comprehensive, addressing prevention through statewide policy, partnerships, community involvement, and treatment. Also a state document, the Statewide Physical Activity and Nutrition Plan for 2007 to 2012, developed by the Nutrition Council of Oregon and the Oregon Coalition for Promoting Physical Activity, also recognizes Oregon's high rate of obesity and the associated disease and health costs. The plan that they came up with is also comprehensive, and it addresses the problem looking at a social ecological model that recognizes an individual behavior is more likely to change when there's also the support through public policy, community organizations, and social networks. The health dividend, Senate Bill 679, is truly an extension of and strongly supports and strengthens both of those above pieces of documentation and research already happening here in Oregon. The goal of Senate Bill 679 is to foster individual behavior change through social, organizational, and societal network of support and motivation. The bill recognizes the strength that people gain when they work together to achieve a goal. All adult and teen family members can qualify to receive a refund, which builds cohesion within a family group while together they're making these behavior changes. The prevention component of this bill is very relevant when younger generations participate, because the potential for delay or prevention of chronic disease is greater when these behavior changes are made early in life. Organizations are already in place, many are already in place, that support Senate Bill 679. They include senior centers, health clubs, faith communities, schools, city parks and recreations, and workplaces. Each of these organizations could easily be a hub for distribution of material that's already available for educating and supporting wellness. They can also provide the setting for groups or individuals to engage in physical activity supportive of healthy body weight, healthy lifestyles. Insurance companies could be at the forefront of smoking and obesity prevention. Insurance companies have great power in access to health care, and under Senate Bill 679, they become partners with businesses and form a supportive alliance with Oregonians who are ready to start or to continue practicing healthy behaviors. Senate Bill 679 encourages communities and organizations to creatively develop support networks to encourage healthy behavior choices
As public policy, Senate Bill 679 further strengthens Oregon's vision and commitment for a healthier population. Thank you.
I think this is a wonderful concept. Last week we had our community in here. It was Public Health Week, and so a lot of us wore our pedometers and walked a lot, but now it's over, and most people have taken their pedometers off.
Still walking.
All right, any other discussion? Thank you so very much for coming.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Jack, maybe just sit down a minute. Dr. Lees has had a lifelong passion with respect to wellness issues. And I've known Jack and I've known Nadine for many, many years. And when we honored a recent former member who had passed away, and there was a reference at the time that sitting at this dais, smoking was allowed. And Dr. Lees remembers being a part of this, coming to the assembly when smoking occurred in this building. And so it's this passion for wellness to change unhealthy lifestyle behaviors that has driven this bill. And I just want to acknowledge the work of Dr. Lees and Nadine in bringing this concept forward. And his passion is unabated to create wellness and to change the cost curve of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And the component that we as consumers of healthcare play in the ability to change our life choices is huge. And it's a part of the equation that really doesn't get a lot of attention, but it makes a huge difference. So, Dr. Lees and Nadine, thank you for bringing this forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's call Teresa Johnson and Denise Johnson from Regents. Teresa Johnson, why don't you go first?
Good morning. It's very, I really appreciate having the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 679. I actually do not know Denise at all, even though we share the same last name. I'm here on behalf of Healthy Albany Partnerships, which is a coalition of agencies, organizations, businesses, and individuals in the Albany area that was formed to promote healthy, active lifestyles through physical activity and good nutrition. And I echo the kind of say ditto to the statistical part that Nadine Wood provided for us. It has been shown that employers who encourage their employees to participate in wellness programs through various incentives have decreased the need for medical care. The employer's costs through the insurance companies have gone down, and that's been shown many, many times. And there are employers that already do offer incentives, but it would be great through Senate Bill 679 to be able to bring that to a lot more employers and their employees. I don't really have a whole lot to add to what was said earlier, but I do have one thing that is part of our up-and-coming generation. And this data is from a report to the New England Journal of Medicine, and it has to do with the life expectancy of children. Obesity is such that this generation of children could be the first, basically in the history of the United States, to live less healthful and shorter lives than their parents. This was said by David F. Ludwig, the director of the obesity program at Children's Hospital in Boston. It's like the quiet before the storm. What would happen if suddenly a massive number of young children started chain smoking? At first, you wouldn't see much public health impact, but years later, it would translate into emphysema, heart disease, and cancer. The same thing is true of obesity. You may not see all the effects right now, but you will see them 10, 20, 30 years from now. You will start to see those health costs go up for those children that have, through inactive lives, sedentary lives and stuff, they have not been living good, healthful lives. And so that's what we're hoping will happen with the various health bills and with Senate Bill 679. Because one of the other things that's been shown is that if the parents are participating in a healthy, active lifestyle, then it's much more likely that the children will also participate in that lifestyle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead. Did you have questions? No questions at this point, but you can stay put.
Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Denise Johnson. I'm the director of HR Director of Benefits, Safety, and Wellness with Regents. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 679, and we'd like the committee to know that there are health plans such as Regents who already have incentives in place, speaking of the program, the kinds of programs that Teresa was mentioning, to support healthy lifestyles. Regents are building a healthy future campaign that we began in 2005. Had three main objectives, and those objectives continue to stand today. One was to replace our workforce's entitlement mentality with a culture of accountability, and that has come a long way, and it continues to grow. To encourage healthy behaviors, creating employee health advocates, both for our members and for our communities, and also to approach employee education and wellness promotion as a long-term commitment. We expected that from the start, and we continue to support wellness on a long-term basis. The integrated approach that we've used reaches every employee at many levels. We've had a phased implementation over the years of a comprehensive wellness program. We call our program Regents Rewards Plus. The wellness incentive program was implemented in October of 2005. One of the aspects of that is that we offer a 35% discount for the menu items in our cafes that are called Your Health, Your Way. So if you purchase a healthy item, you get a 35% discount on that particular food item. We also have a tobacco-free campus policy that we implemented a couple of years ago. We have the full support of our CEO and our executive team that has made a tremendous difference, and we continue to have that support. We also provide graduated cost sharing in our benefit premiums. So depending on your pay range, you pay a lower or a higher premium for your benefits. Just to show that how the right incentives can result in desired behavior changes, when we began our wellness program, actually in 2004, there were no incentives or formal incentives in place. We had 11% participation in our workforce. Since then, we have now increased to 68% participation as of the end of last year. The year that we actually introduced the incentives almost the end of 2005, it shot up to 26% just in those couple of months. The increase in the percentage of transactions, the healthy purchases in the cafes, has increased from the first year that it began from 28% to 70% of the items that are sold are in the healthy category. Fewer and less severe workers' compensation claims are occurring. The MOD factor upon which the premium is based fell from 1.45 in 2005 to 1.05 in 2009. The components of the Rewards Plus program include education and learning options. We've actually expanded beyond just healthcare to financial fitness, safety, ergonomics, and ethics and compliance. Additional components include fitness centers on site in most of our locations, corporate fitness partnerships in areas where we don't have room for fitness centers, the healthy food incentives in on-site cafes as well as in vending machines, Weight Watchers at work, something we call snack attack, which we push a cart around the organization and trade people for the unhealthy snacks they have in their desks for healthy snacks, and they do actually give them up. We've also introduced family wellness programs, so starting to involve the employees' families as well as the employees at work. Something called Regents Vitality, which encompasses a prenatal care, etc. Something called Kinetics, which is a program that encompasses weight management as well as nutrition. We have on-site massage in many locations, and we offer a brochure that we created ourselves called Backwise Workwise, which provides you with exercises, stretch exercises, that you can do at your desk while you're at work. The most recent awards that we've received from the American Heart Association, we received the Platinum Award this year in 2008 for our program, as well as an Innovation Award for the Snack Attack, and last year we received the Gold Achievement Award from the American Heart Association. And I thank you for the opportunity to share our program with you.
Excellent. We're doing, I think, a lot in this session regarding obesity in particular. So I'm happy to see this bill brought forward. Any comments? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some curiosity about the logistics of how this works. I mean, you talked about your internal stuff, but how would this cash awards system actually work, number one? And number two is, have there been conversations with DCBS on this? Is this going to create a whole nother reporting system outside of what currently exists? Is really the issues I have at this point.
I can tell you about the program that Regents created, and it was based on our internal program. Something called member choice. You earn dollars that go into your member choice account. This is a particular product that has been filed with the state. And the dollars go into the member choice account up to a certain amount per year if you do the prescribed healthy activities that the program requires.
Okay. But comments on, I mean, the whole... the connection to DCBS, what the reporting requirements are going to be, are we creating new bureaucratic process here, and which would be potentially troubling, but it could also be something relatively streamlined, relatively simple. And my concern, Madam Chair, is sometimes the things we do aren't as simple and straightforward as they should be. So.
Well, why don't we bring DCBS, carry this bill over to Thursday and just have that clarified, yeah. And then pass it out on Thursday.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I'm not objecting. I just want to make sure we're not doing unintended things here. So.
Yeah, Senator Morrison, then Senator Bates.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In response to Senator Cruz, we did vet this with DCBS, with Clark Streisinger. And I can read into the record. Our insurance division reviewed the language of Senate Bill 679, and that was the first before the amendment, before the dash ones, and looked at both the insurance code and federal HIPAA restrictions to determine what, if any, issues might exist with the bill. With regard to state statutory issues, the only potential issue we saw was that premium rates for individual plans are limited by factors of ORS 743. To the extent that the dividends proposed by Senate Bill 679 would be considered lowered premiums, there may be some conflict here. This would be easily remedied, however, with a provision indicating such as notwithstanding, and then the citation of the ORS, which I understand that in fact we have accomplished in the language in the dash.
Okay, Senator Morris, we don't have the dash ones in front of us.
Oh, we've got the FIS-RIS on them, but we don't have the amendment.
Yeah, we have the fiscal and the revenue impact. So could you give your dash ones to Katie, and we'll make copies?
My apologies.
Yeah, no problem.
I think Mr. Wright may have copies.
Oh, Mr. Wright might have some copies.
And then also, Madam Chair, the comment of Ms. Streisinger is, under these conditions, we believe the program would satisfy HIPAA. So I believe, and we can double-check with DCBS, but I believe the issues have been vetted and resolved.
What the dash ones do, basically it says that the Section 2 applies to the health benefit plans offered or renewed on or after the effective date of this 2009 Act. That's what it does. Then I'm comfortable. But
Manager, I'm comfortable with the, I think with the dash lines of the bill, it's permissive, and I think bringing DCPS and we have a be interesting discussion. I know it's late in session for this, but one of the things that crossed my mind, and I don't know the answer to, is when an insurer asks for a rate setting by DCPS, there's various factors they look at in doing this. And I wonder if one of those factors that they're allowed to look at is, it is if they're looking at a particular company, if they're allowed to offer a financial package as far as premiums concerned that is higher or lower based on the wellness programs that company might have in place. Has that actually been a part of the discussions for rate setting? That's where the rubber kind of meets the road. If they have that, do they have the freedom to do that? I would leave that in the hands of the insurer, not the state, but give them their permission to do that if they wish to go to a particular company or a group of people and say, if you have these programs in place, we can offer you a lower premium, but let them handle it. I'm not interested in in having the state do it. It really is an important issue. We know that roughly 60% of the health care issues we deal with are from lifestyle. They're not from anything else but lifestyle. Smoking, obesity, lack of exercise, diet, all things we think about. So when that's driving 60% of health care costs, the ability for an insurer to have that kind of leeway, I think, would be important. But I want them to do it, not not the state. So I don't know if that's part of rate setting or not.
Let's carry the bill over and have DCBS answer some of the questions that the members have. Any further discussion?
I'm not trying to kill the bill. There are just some questions here.
And for those of you, if you don't want to come, you can actually hear this online from your home to see what we do with this then on Thursday. And any other further discussion on this bill? With that, I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 679. And colleagues, we've scheduled an evening meeting for Thursday, but the way things are going, we may get everything done in the morning, but could you just hold that open just in case we all of a sudden are able to get all of our bills out of committee? All right. Any other comments? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.